Support for this public radio podcast comes from KeyBank, focused knowledge, customized solutions, and the resources of an entire bank. Because the best solutions fit around a business's needs. More at key.com/corporate. Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, dedicated to a prudent approach to investing. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Talk about racing right down to the wire. It was a real photo finish for the private equity takeover of Chrysler. Cerberus Capital Management had to put the pedal to the metal to finalize all the funding it needed to formally close the deal today. And it happened just about the time Wall Street was flying a very big caution flag. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Bantam Trade Paperbacks, publisher of Social Intelligence, The New Science of Human Relationships by Daniel Goleman, author of Emotional Intelligence. Coverage of Asia is supported by the Freeman Foundation.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Bob Moon, in for Kai Ryssdal, who's on assignment. Mark this Friday, August 3rd, as the day Chrysler began a new chapter in its 82-year history. It is once again an American-owned company and now officially being operated by the private equity firm Cerberus Capital Management. Now that it's sealed the deal, the new management has its work cut out. David Zoya is editorial director for Ward's Automotive Report. He says it'll actually be the same set of executives running the show and trying to deal with the same problems.
There's a lot of opportunity here for Cerberus, but there are some challenges here for Chrysler. I think the first thing, which is really the case with each of the big three, would be to get through the labor negotiations. You know, what's critical at this stage is to get a deal that closes that competitive gap with the foreign companies that are operating here.
So Cerberus may have steered Chrysler through the growing credit crunch. But the problems remain for some other big names. Bear Stearns had its debt rating downgraded by Standard & Poor's today. The big investment house has been hit by problems with three high-profile hedge funds and is one of many financial companies struggling to come to terms with big losses in the mortgage industry. As Marketplace's Steve Henn reports, some industry economists are beginning to worry this latest financial crisis may not be so well contained after all.
Tom Lamolf is an economist who's followed the mortgage lending industry for 35 years. He believes the industry's already in the midst of a credit crunch.
I've never seen anything quite like this.
Big investors who for years have been buying up packages of risky mortgage loans have pulled back. This week, those decisions drove American Home Mortgage to cease most operations. Other large lenders have found it more expensive to raise cash. And all this is trickling down to consumers.
It's going to increase mortgage rates for them.
That will make buying a home cost more, and
fewer and fewer borrowers will be granted credit and will be given home mortgages. And this will have ripple effects because it will then slow the entire housing market. I ultimately believe that this takes us into a recession.
Lamolfa thinks home prices could fall as much as 30%. Most economists aren't that pessimistic, but agree prices are likely to drop. Thomas Lawler, a housing economist in Vienna, Virginia, says potentially thousands of Americans could soon find themselves owing more on their homes than those homes are worth. Think about that for a second.
If they sold their home, they'd have to bring cash at closing to give to the lender. But if people who have to move, job change or whatever, this is a challenging situation.
For many Americans, it would transform what had been their biggest asset, their home, into a liability. In Washington, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
We are experiencing technical difficulties, and they could have serious effects come the holiday shopping season. Take-Two Interactive just put the brakes on a highly anticipated video game sequel. The latest installment of Grand Theft Auto won't hit shelves until spring. It had been due this October, and the delay threatens to be a drag on holiday sales for the whole video game business. Then there are the chips that run some of those games, and music players, and a lot of other things. As Lisa Napoli reports, a power outage on the other side of the world could cause a pricing jolt for all of us.
Anyone who makes digital cameras, cell phones, MP3 players, and the like is keeping a close eye on a production shutdown near Seoul today. A power outage halted chip making at 6 of Samsung's 16 semiconductor plants where flash memory cards are made. Those cards are as essential to many electronic devices as water is to humans. The shutdown comes just when the industry was starting to recover from a lag in supply.
The timing is pretty bad.
That's analyst Nam Kim of research firm iSupply. He says Samsung alone makes well over 40% of the world's supply of this kind of flash memory. Now, the plants are supposed to get back up and running over the weekend, but some industry watchers say even a few days offline could wipe out a month's supply of this coveted memory. Turns out that making these chips is kind of like making a souffle. One slip up in production along the way, and the whole batch can be toast.
If you lose power in one of these really critical steps, it can do irreparable damage to the wafer that's in process.
John Greenagle is with the Semiconductor Industry Association. He says a major disruption in supply could cause prices for memory to swell in the short term. That would be a change for the semiconductor industry. Even though more products than ever use flash memory cards, an industry report out today shows prices have generally been on the wane. In Los Angeles, I'm Lisa Napoli for Marketplace.
A pop quiz now. Which country comes to mind when I mention fine chocolate and watches? How about army knives? They're all the pride of Switzerland, of course. In fact, the symbol of the Swiss army knife could almost be considered the tiny country's trademark. Now there's a chance the famous knife might one day carry the label Made in China over the objections of some Swiss citizens. Marketplace's Janet Babin reports from North Carolina Public Radio.
Who knows why the Swiss would tamper with a gadget that can already open a bottle of wine and, in a pinch, pluck your eyebrows. But there's an update in the works, a model for the actual Swiss Army, and its production could be outsourced to China. Steve Supan is with the Institute for Agriculture and Trade Policy. He says the reason has to do with a World Trade Organization rule. It could force Switzerland to award the knife contract to the lowest bidder.
You have to treat bidders on government procurement contracts from a foreign country just as you would treat your own.
That is, if a country has agreed to the WTO rule. China isn't a party to the agreement, but Hong Kong, China is. China watcher Donald Strausheim with Roth Capital Partners says Chinese producers would have a leg up on the bidding.
I would bet my whole checkbook that they've been producing so-called Swiss Army knives illegally and selling them as $1 knockoffs for years.
Rather than remain neutral, some Swiss officials are reportedly looking for ways around the WTO rules. Steve Supan says the outsourcing could violate WTO's intellectual property laws.
Switzerland, in theory, could say, well, you know, this is no longer a Swiss Army knife. We'll call it the Chinese Army knife, but it can't be called a Swiss Army knife.
Another exemption? If the Swiss can prove the pocket knife is a matter of national security. I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
Sorry, can't resist. The knives were out on Wall Street today. We'll have the details on how much cutting was done when we do the numbers. A new Homeland Security bill signed by President Bush today aims to tighten screening of air and sea cargo. It requires inspection of all freight on passenger planes within 3 years, and it sets a 5-year goal of scanning all container ships for nuclear devices before they leave foreign ports. The Bush administration failed to convince Congress to overhaul the nation's immigration system, and now the Department of Homeland Security looks to be making good on a promise to crack down on its own. It wants to target illegal immigrants using fake Social Security numbers. But as Marketplace's Dan Gretsch reports from the Americas desk at WLRN, the effort could ensnare millions of legal U.S. citizens as well.
For years, there's been an unspoken agreement between employers and illegal workers. The workers offered up fake documents, and employers didn't check them out. Now that arrangement could cost both parties dearly. The immigrants could get fired, and the employers could get fined. Up to $10,000 per worker per incident.
What's really puzzling here is why wasn't this done before?
Steve Camerata's with the Center for Immigration Studies.
We let millions of people work in the United States on bogus and made-up or clerical error Social Security numbers, but nothing was ever done about it.
Camerata estimates more than half of illegal workers in the U.S. use fraudulent Social Security numbers. That's a good 4 million people. Under the new policy, employers have 60 days to verify a Social Security number, or CAM the worker.
We're talking about undocumented working in an environment of fear. We're going to have employers working in the same environment of fear.
Kathleen Campbell Walker's president of the American Immigration Lawyers Association. She says a recent spate of immigration raids has already led many employers to scrutinize the I-9 forms used to establish worker eligibility.
Employers are trying to proactively take a hard look at their I-9s, and what they'd rather have is an easy fix.
These new rules could cause headaches for legitimate workers as well. An estimated 12.7 million U.S. citizens have errors in their records and could be caught in the crackdown. I'm Dan Gretsch for Marketplace.
Contrary to the sound of some rhetoric lately, there is not some kind of big unwelcome mat rolled out along our southern border. In fact, given an unseasonably wet summer for Texas and a resulting lack of tourists venturing there, some destinations in the Lone Star State are looking south for some relief. As Joyce Diaz reports, they're happy to have visitors from Mexico.
Texas attracts more visitors from Mexico than from any other country. More than 6 million came last year. They spent more than $3.5 billion. So cities like San Antonio are doing everything they can to get a piece of the action. Frances Scholschick is with San Antonio's Convention and Visitors Bureau. She goes to Mexico about 12 times a year. Recently, she took part in a live radio show at a mall in Monterrey, Mexico. While on the air, she gave away several dozen passes to San Antonio's biggest attractions.
When it comes to tourism, people have options, and they have many, many options. And so we want to make sure that San Antonio's top of mind at all times.
The city constantly upgrades its attractions. Last year, an investment of close to $200 million was made to expand the Riverwalk, a series of stores and restaurants along the San Antonio River. Another big draw is the Aquatic Center SeaWorld. Even on rainy days, these places draw crowds of Mexican visitors, people like Enrique Ornelas and his family from Mexico City.
We normally visit, of course, the Alamo, SeaWorld. We go to San Marcos. There's always the motivation to do some shopping. That's very important.
Outlet malls are the main destination for more than 70% of Mexican tourists. New outlets are popping up all along the U.S.-Mexico border. One mall in the town of San Marcos recently expanded to include a Venice look-alike canal complete with gondolas. Susan Narvaez is San Marcos mayor.
People don't realize how much wealth there is in Mexico. You know, people that are willing to come over here and spend that money to get that particular pair of jeans that they want or a watch.
San Marcos is planning free buses to take tourists from the outlets and into the downtown area starting next year. And the state capital, Austin, is also vying for the tourist dollars. A new Mexican-American cultural center just opened nearby. The city's airport has also added direct flights into Mexico City. In Austin, I'm Joy Diaz for Marketplace.
Time to check the week on Wall Street with stockbroker and marketplace business analyst David Johnson in Dallas. David, are you breathing yet?
Oh, yeah. Boy, you know, I can't tell you how nice it is to see a friendly face, though, Bob. This has been a bizarre week that at no point really felt good.
What was the problem all week?
Well, it's a variety of things. I mean, and it all centers, you know, swirls around, you know, the subprime and stuff like that. But this has become a problem that's much wider spread, or at least has the potential to be much more widespread than just the housing market. It's beyond that. It's you know, deals that were going to get done that aren't going to get funded now, and uncertainty about the solvency of the big financial companies, the Lehman Brothers and Goldman Sachs and Bear Stearns of the world. All those stocks have been killed the last couple of days.
How much of this is a real problem and how much of it is psychological, and does it matter?
Well, it doesn't matter because it can become self-fulfilling. But we've seen this in the market all the time. The market overreacts. There's uncertainty. You don't know. And see, that's the problem. You don't know. You don't know how many hedge funds are in trouble and if it really is going to have an impact on the average Joe, or, you know, how really negatively impacted the sort of conventional housing market is, and whether the Fed's going to have to walk in and do something. And that's always true. I mean, whether it's a stock market or whether it's you as an individual, it's the uncertainty that just drives you up a tree.
Are we seeing a slow-motion train wreck here?
Well, I don't know how slow it is. I mean, I haven't seen it. I mean, how many markets have you seen? How many times have you seen the New York Stock Exchange trade over 2 billion shares a day in the summertime? I mean, Bob, you did time in New York. You know, I mean, everybody's gone in the summertime.
It was an unusually busy day today.
You know, and then there's just also that nagging fear that, you know, that there are a bunch of bankers who are out there needle pointing little sayings that are going to go up on their wall that say neither a borrower nor a lender be.
Well, speaking of borrowing and lending, where is all this headed? What is the Fed going to do? Are we going to see an interest rate cut anytime soon?
Well, you know, it's possible. And the thing is, it's doable now, because what they did is and it looked so stupid at the time, is they jacked up those interest rates, whatever it was, 13, 14 consecutive times. And you do that so you have ammunition in case you need it, in case times get tough. You know, you pull the trigger. They got a meeting next week. The markets think there's literally are pricing in a 100% chance that the Fed will cut interest rates sometime this year, and not to fuel inflation, but, you know, because they have to. They probably weren't going to cut next week. But maybe they'll say something, you know, blow a couple of kisses toward the housing market, for example.
And in the meantime, we just have to keep our seatbelts fastened, huh?
Yeah, we better cancel the mega merger Monday that we had planned for 3 days from now.
Oh, it's going to be a crazy summer. Thank you, David. David Johnson in Dallas. Coming up, women dish out dating advice for men on the move.
From like a female perspective, when I'm out and about and I see maybe three guys together, I know that they're out there trying to meet ladies, and it's kind of off-putting.
But first, let's do the numbers. Once again, a troubled mortgage industry and credit worries took stocks down. Ouch, the Dow Jones Industrial Average fell 281 points, or 2%, to close at 13,181. The Nasdaq lopped off 64 points, or 2.5%, to end at 2511. The S&P 500 lost 39 points, or 2.75%, to wind up at 1433. For the week, the Dow sliced off 0.7%, the Nasdaq parted with 2%, the S&P 500 kissed 1.8% goodbye. Countrywide Financial fell 6.6%, and American Home Mortgage Investment, a smaller competitor, tanked 52%. Earlier this week, it stopped taking mortgage loans and slashed thousands of jobs. Today, state banking officials issued a cease and desist order for possible violations of mortgage banking laws. Bonds rose, the yield on the 10-year T-note fell to 4.68%. And you're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, recognizing the value of financial advice since 1937. Putnam Investments, a prudent approach to investing. Marketplace is podcasting. Marketplace Takeout is a mix of our best stories from the past week, the cream of the crop from our reporters around the world, delivered to you on the go wherever you are. Want to sign up? Just go to marketplace.org and click on the podcast link at the top of the page. Or you can download entire shows of Marketplace and Marketplace Money at audible.com.
Here's a look at the Marketplace Datebook for events coming up Monday. President Bush hosts Afghan President Hamid Karzai at Camp David. In an effort to get red light runners to hit the brakes, organizers convene at the National Press Club to kick off the 2007 observance of National Stop on Red Week. And the man who brought Campbell's Soup to a whole new level of fame was born on August 6th. Were he alive today, pop artist Andy Warhol would be 79. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Bob Moon in for Kai Rizdal. The Senate sent its ethics and lobbying law to the president today. Now lawmakers will have to pay for private plane rides and disclose more about pet projects and funds that lobbyists raise on their behalf. The law also prohibits lobbyists from paying for lawmakers' meals and entertainment. Commentator Jeff Birnbaum has spotted a very big exception.
Lobbying laws are separate from campaign finance laws, and the legislation just approved does not touch campaign funding laws at all. The ban on meals, therefore, doesn't apply to fundraising events. There, lobbyists and their clients will be able to buy food and entertainment for any lawmaker they want. The result is the following perversity. Lobbyists will not be able to pick up the check for a member of Congress anymore unless they also hand the lawmakers a check for their reelection campaigns. In other words, the law designed to persuade the public that lawmakers are not in the pockets of special interests will probably increase the number of events that the public sees as synonymous with corruption, lobbyist-led fundraisers. Welcome to the world of unintended consequences. The meal and gift ban is not really a ban at all. It has nearly two dozen exceptions in addition to the fundraiser loophole. For example, lobbyists generally will not be able to pay for lawmakers' tickets to sporting events. But lobbyists can host lawmakers if the lawmakers have some sort of official role in those events. If they throw out the first pitch at a baseball game, or toss the coin at the start of a football game, or wave the checkered flag at the end of a NASCAR race, the ticket for them can be free. Sweet. And that's not all. Lawmakers can attend all sorts of lobbyist-paid events as long as they're carefully constructed. For instance, if they are widely attended, like receptions. Also, charity golf tournaments are perfectly legit. Money is fungible, they say, and nowhere is that truer than in Washington. After the legislation is signed into law, it won't be business as usual anymore. In some ways, it'll be business worse than usual.
Jeff Birnbaum is a columnist for The Washington Post. Your thoughts? Just click on the contact link at marketplace.org. Maybe you've heard it said that someone is never more attracted to the opposite sex than when he or she is already involved in a relationship. Their attractiveness supposedly evaporates once they're single. One recent study even turned up some scientific support for that phenomenon. Well, now there's a dating service in Washington, D.C. that's tapping into that general idea. As Stuart Cohen tells us, it's a matchmaking service with a new twist.
It's Saturday night, and James Johnson is working the crowd at the Aroma Bar in Washington's Cleveland Park neighborhood.
We jet lagged? Flying over there?
No.
That's a long flight, right?
Yeah.
But Johnson isn't alone in his search for love. He's got a secret weapon, his wing woman, Tiffany.
This is my friend James.
How are you, lady?
This is Karen.
Karen.
Karen, how you doing, girl?
Hi. I'm trying to get James into salsa dancing. We just started.
Unlike the typical wing man, an outgoing male companion whose mission is to go in and break the ice for a more timid friend, Tiffany is no old college buddy or coworker. She's a professional, paid upwards of $50 an hour to help Johnson negotiate one of the most perplexing endeavors known to man, meeting members of the opposite sex.
The one girl that we were talking to.
Tall girl?
Yes. Tall. She was nice, but she's with that guy who's sitting down.
Okay.
I don't know how they're together, but they are together.
Exactly. I mean,
do you like this Asian girl coming up? Because I know her. Look to your left.
Tiffany is one of four wing women who work for the dating service Venus Allure. Her job is to approach women in social situations, strike up a conversation in that sisterhood sort of way, you know, a little chit-chat about shoes or purses, and then introduce the client, all without letting on it's a carefully orchestrated setup. Similar services have popped up in New York, Toronto, and even as far away as London. Steve Zaloga started his business a few months ago after a successful experience with a wing woman of his own. He says meeting a potential mate is too important to be left to amateurs.
Her objective is to help you and give you feedback and introduce you to women. Your friends,
that may or may not be their objective. Even if they start out that way, they may get confused. They may want to talk to girls themselves. But she's dedicated to your success, and she's focused on it.
One of Tiffany's colleagues at Venus Allure is Jessica Lee. She says, from a woman's perspective, it all makes perfect sense.
When I'm out and about and I see maybe three guys together, I know that they're out there trying to meet ladies, and it's kind of off-putting to see these three guys who are out there looking at the situation from like a meat market perspective. But if there's a girl in the mix, you know, in my head I'm thinking, well, there obviously must be something to these guys if that girl's going to be hanging out with them.
Company owner Steve Zaloga says it's all about gaining an extra advantage in the cutthroat world of dating, where one wrong step could be the difference between miss right and missed opportunity.
This isn't just all about opening a door for a client. It's also about giving them some tools and some strategies and some techniques to be successful on their own. So we provide, you know, real-time feedback and coaching and some success strategies for people while they're on the date.
All that talk about feedback and strategies makes dating sound more like science than romance. A recent study at the University of Aberdeen in Scotland proves it is science.
There's a phenomenon that's very well established in the animal literature that's called mate choice copying.
Lead researcher Dr. Ben Jones says just like birds and fish, women are using cues from other women to make quick decisions about who they find attractive. In other words, they're just doing it like they do on the Discovery Channel.
But this is information that it's quite difficult to tell on sort of first impressions. So using information from other women might help you to sort of fill in the gaps in what you do and don't know about the guy.
Back at the Aroma Bar, Tiffany has had a couple hours to put her skills to work for James Johnson, and it's time to wrap up the evening. But things have worked so well, she doesn't want to interrupt Johnson and his new acquaintance to say goodbye. So she very quietly heads for the door.
James had actually picked her out from the beginning, but there were different barriers stopping us from speaking to her. We were able to get to her eventually.
Yeah.
And how we walked out and we saw them talking and having their cell phones out, I'm pretty confident that they are exchanging phone numbers.
As for James Johnson's thoughts on the evening, well, he was a bit too busy to bother with silly questions. In Washington, I'm Stuart Cohen for Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, where a well-thought-out allocation strategy can strengthen your portfolio. Putnam Investments, a prudent approach to investing. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business.
And this final note, maybe for those commiserating over the state of the markets, Nissan is unveiling technology that will watch over the drivers who imbibe and drive. The Japanese carmaker has unveiled a concept car that detects the smell of booze on the breath or in the sweat, and if the driver's tipsy, the car won't start. Now, the technology hasn't been fine-tuned enough to measure the level of alcohol in the system. And as for calling a cab, you'll have to take care of that yourself. The technology may not hit the market for another couple of years, so if you've been drowning your sorrows today, please drive safely. And that is Marketplace from American Public Media. Today, the Dow dropped 281 points, 2%. The Nasdaq fell 64 points, 2.5%. The S&P 500 lost 39 points, 2.75%. Our theme music was composed by B.J. Lederman. Marketplace is produced by Celeste Wesson. The executive producer is J.J. Yore. Next time, gold prospectors go digging and dreaming in Haiti.
Junior mining companies are notorious for talking up their properties, and it's an industry that has as many stories of overpromised resources as there are stories of discovering huge deposits when no one expected them.
I'm Bob Moon. Kai's back here on Monday. Hope you will be too.
American Public Media.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.